It is National Championship Game Week of the 2022 college football season. This is the We Hate Your Team podcast. I'm Kelly Ford, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Zach King. Kinger, the National Championship game is here. How we feeling?
Feeling great, man. Natty Championship Week. This is it. We get to do this one more time this season. Really excited for this one. Bringing in some new blood from TCU. Georgia obviously been there before, defending national champs. But love the matchup. Really excited to break this down with you guys this week. I think there's going to be a lot. I think it's going to be a great football game. I think there's going to be a lot of opportunities for both teams here, exploiting weaknesses. And this is definitely one of the more exciting national championships, I would say, for me personally, in the last couple of years.
100%, Kinger. We've got Georgia back for the second time in a row, having won their first national championship in 41 years just last year in my backyard here in Indianapolis. Now they're back. They want to do it again. And then we've got TCU, who was very close to reaching this stage in 2014. Their fans still bitter about that. They get a great win against Michigan in the semifinal, and they're in their first national championship game appearance in decades. So it's going to be incredible. We're going to talk about that game, King. We're going to briefly recap the semifinal games. But first, we are joined by two guests tonight. We usually only have one, but with a game of this magnitude, we had to bring in an expert from each side. Our first one, you'll recognize the name. He's known on Twitter as @StatsOfWar. It's our good friend, Parker Fleming, representing TCU. Parker, how we doing, man?
I'm great, guys. Thanks for having me here. It's been a fun and exciting week. Still doesn't feel real that TCU went to the playoff, let alone won a game, and is here playing for a national championship. So super excited to dive into it.
We cannot wait, Parker, and thank you so much again for joining us. Our listeners will remember Parker was our very first ever guest on the podcast when we started this back in the 2021 season. Our other guest that we have with us tonight is somebody who we were actually going to have on in 2023, just came a little bit early, representing Georgia. He is known on Twitter as @DogStats. It's our friend Josh. Josh, welcome to the podcast, man.
Thank you for having me, guys. I just want to say I'm real excited. It's a true Cinderella story in the making. We've got the highly touted four-star quarterback up against the up-and-coming walk-on Stetson Bennett. So finally, you know, we get this matchup that everyone wants, the Cinderella story there.
Absolutely. Two very highly touted quarterbacks leading their teams to great success this year. It is interesting, though, Josh. I'm sure we'll get into that more a little bit later. When we think about national championship teams, you always start at the quarterback position. It's the most important position in all of football, NFL, college, high school. It doesn't really matter. We do have two pretty unheralded at this point, and that's crazy to say when one of them has already won a national championship, right? But we'll get more into that here in a bit. I do just want to give you guys a few minutes to talk about yourselves, talk about your career paths, your involvement in the college football space. Parker, you've undergone some changes since the last time we talked to you on the professional front. So let's start with you, Parker. Just anything you're comfortable sharing, just remind our listeners a little bit about yourself, your background, how you got into college football analytics, and just the floor is yours, man. Take it away, and then we'll do the same thing with Josh.
Yeah. I just was bored in math classes in college. Well, in grad school, I was a liberal arts major undergrad. And so being bored in math classes in grad school, I just started to apply it to football because that's how I could really learn, especially the programming side of things, and wanted to learn the language R for some professional reasons. And football data is rectangular and generally clean. And so it made it easy to kind of get in there and play around with it. Just started posting stuff to, you know, ask and answer interesting questions that I thought were relevant to the game. Of course, you know, owe a ton to Bill Conley and Brian Fremo and a bunch of other guys like that, Aaron Schatz at Football Outsiders, Jamie Plunkett at Frogs of War really got me into saying, you know, we'd be drunk at the tailgates talking about football and numbers. And he's like, dude, you got to write some of this down. So, so doing all that, you know, finishing up grad school and everything. And, again, just kind of posting and creating tools that are interesting and talking about the game and having fun and all that. And recently just took a position as a data scientist at Sumer Sports, where we're working on some NFL tools for NFL teams and behind the scenes working on some cool stuff that I'll really be excited to share soon, both NFL and college. So that's been really fun to kind of definitely bridge the gap from the online hobby to this is a real thing. Along the way, gotten to do my own podcast, Purple Theory, where I just get to have a beer and talk to my buddy Grant about TCU football. That turns out a lot of people like listening to that as well. And so that's really, really great. And then of course the folks at BetUS have been really generous in supporting me and Gary and Kyle doing the BetUS show twice a week, where we give some picks and talk about the games and break all that down. So I've been in the last 2 years, learned a ton about like the actual business and finance side of betting, not just the picks and numbers and make a game happen. So that's been really, really fun to kind of grow in that opportunity as well.
Kinger, listening to Parker just recap all the areas that he's involved in now professionally as he's grown here over the last couple of years, like there's a reason he was our first guest on the podcast, right? I think that just goes to show all the cool things he's doing. Parker, so cool. We're so excited to have you back. Happy for you with Sumer Sports. And it's been great to listen to you on all those different outlets here over the last year and a half since we first started up our podcast here on We Hate Your Team. So, Josh, we'll let you follow that one up. Tell our listeners a little bit about yourself. How did you get started? I mean, where did Dog Stats come from? Just the floor is yours. Take it away.
Thank you, guys. I actually am a little different than what actually you and Parker do. You guys model, you guys and do some projections and do a lot of things I don't do. I'm more of a stats curator and explainer and look at the stats and analytics and metrics and sort of just kind of in the UGA fan space and the UGA blog space, and just sort of get a chance to explain what success rate is and try to explain what EPA is and sort of explain why these things matter, and also try to bridge that gap of, they're not just numbers, they're really just the same way you've watched football and just sort of, and I just kind of dug into that fan space. This is a passion hobby, a passion project of mine. And I got into it because I got sick of being running my fantasy football league, but I still wanted to crunch numbers and do stuff like that. So I just literally just went to Dogs, WordPress and just got dogstats.com and just kind of ran with it. And I've bounced around to a couple different blogs most recently. My good friend and anybody that follows Georgia should know Graham Coffey, Dog Out West, has launched Dog Central, which is a real great site we've got going with, forum and my blog is there and a bunch of other blogs and stuff. So it's really just a chance to look at the numbers and explain them. And we actually do a good bit of film and video breakdown to accompany and sort of talk about the stats and actually see what they mean, what they look like in the postmortem of a game. So it's been a good couple of years to be in the UGA blog space for sure.
That is awesome. And yes, definitely been keeping up with your work. You mentioned Graham there, the Dogs Out West. He's been a great follow for me as well. It sounds like, Josh, what you just described in Kinger, I don't know if you'd agree. We had KSU fan on a few weeks ago. Now, I think it was for conference championship game weekend, maybe. Very similar to what he does in terms of taking stats that are out there and making them pretty and presentable. He does it for Kansas State in the Big 12. Josh over here doing it mainly for Georgia, the SEC, things like that. So we have had a guest who does this, seems to do similar things to that, Josh. But very excited to have you on and have this Georgia angle, which we so desperately need since this has been the best program in college football over the last 2 years. So Kinger, anything for either Parker or Josh here before we dive into semifinal recaps?
These guys just do a wonderful service and offer excellent content for the college football fans out there, especially dumb guys like me who don't know the math, who don't know the numbers very well. Getting that different angle and being educated and trying to understand the game at a deeper level, what these guys provide, it's phenomenal. Josh just recently started following your work. Parker, we've known him for a couple of years now. I've been following his live show with Kyle and Gary now for a good portion of the college football season, and just providing a different angle and just allowing people who really want to soak up this content, enjoy it. These are just great people to listen to, and you can learn a lot from them. So it's awesome to have them on. I can't wait to hear their perspectives on the game tonight, talking about those playoff games last Saturday and diving into this national championship. I think we're gonna have a great discussion, and we got a couple great guests for this national championship.
Well, I think we've built them up sufficiently. It's time to dive into that knowledge that they bring, Kinger. And we'll have to supplement tonight, King. We got the true experts in the house with us, so we're just really excited. Let's do it. Let's go in chronological order of how these semifinals happen. So we'll start with the Fiesta Bowl. It was TCU holding off Michigan. There are a few parts of that game that drew some controversy, drew some ire. Michigan fans saying we could have, should have won the game. I think Ohio State fans say the same thing about their game, which we'll get to in a bit. But at the end of the day, TCU found a way to win yet again. Another game they were underdogs in, by my numbers, by Vegas, by all sorts of things. Parker, we'll start with you as the TCU expert, but we also want to get Josh in here on this. Kinger and I will provide some of our thoughts as well. But we got to start with you. What were your takeaways? What were you thinking as TCU is in the playoff for the first time? It's a back and forth game, edge of your seat. I mean, what were you feeling during this game and how did TCU pull it out?
Well, I think the biggest issue for TCU in this game, the way that they really started out, was they didn't let Michigan get into a positive game script. I think that's what Michigan's done, even if it's taking them to the second half. What Michigan is set up to do is to get a slight advantage and then sit and just press on you and press on you and press on you. And TCU, with a J.J. McCarthy mistake, was able to get kind of ahead of the chains there and make sure that they weren't playing from behind ever. And I think two factors kind of went into that as well. One, Michigan's play calling at the goal line, they had to do that. They had to make play calls at the goal line because TCU did something super important. They didn't let the big play turn into the touchdown, especially early on. Bud Clark runs all the way across the field, tackles Donovan Edwards on that very first play, and Michigan comes up with 0 points. Also, I think it was very, very clear that Michigan really didn't have a good sense of what they were good at and not good at with Blake Corum out and with Donovan Edwards, and didn't feel like they really had a dialed in sense of what they were going to do. And lastly, I do think that the narrative of physicality was extremely simplistic, just in the fact that TCU's defense is designed to funnel you to certain places and then let these small guys come out of nowhere and just smack the ever-loving heck out of you. And I think Michigan did legitimately expect to be able to just line up and push things around. So when TCU got that first pick six, I immediately went into, like, earlier that day, I was like tracking, you know, starting field position, expected echo rate and all that for Kansas State, Alabama. And the second TCU got the pick six, I was like, nope, I'm watching this. I'm not going to do any of that. So just went full fan mode from there.
Were you, after that, Michigan opens up the game with the 75-yard Donovan Edwards run, you know, TCU makes that goal line stand. Do you think Harbaugh and Michigan, from, I guess, an analytics perspective, do you think it's a different ball game if they just take the three from the start instead of giving TCU that momentum and that big goal line stand?
I don't believe that anyone's empirically measured momentum, so I'm kind of inclined to believe that I don't think it necessarily mm-hmm. exists. In terms of game script, you know, they definitely gave TCU worse field position there. And I think that Michigan, you'd like to imagine your defense can kind of make hay out of that situation. And their offense had fine field position. I don't want to say the exact number without getting that correct. But so on that second drive, I mean, they're first and 10 at their own 34 after TCU going three and out.
Yep.
That's fine momentum for me, right? Like that's exactly what I want out of this is saying, okay, we didn't do well, but we stopped you immediately and we've got the ball in plus field position. Let's take it down. So I'm actually okay with going for it. I think the way in which they went for it was a little mm-hmm. bizarre, with the Philly special and giving it to a guy who hadn't been really featured in the offense. And also it was pretty telegraphed. Right. I'm also not a fan of putting your quarterback in a position to take a hit. I know like Oklahoma a couple times did that with Dylan Gabriel this year. I was like, man, I would not let that happen to my quarterback. And so I don't know if it was the momentum as such. I think that interception is really what really set things wrong, not necessarily going for it on fourth down there.
Yeah, because from my perspective, if I was Michigan, I was taking a three to start the game, right? I mean, you have the logic behind it of going for it. You're going to rely on your defense that's been so good all year long. You want to set the tone, but taking those 3 points early, there's still so much ball game left. And I'm with you, Parker. I don't think it probably would have made that big of an impact on the remainder of the game. But from my perspective, I probably would have approached it a little bit differently. If I was Harbaugh, I would have taken the points early and not given TCU that confidence on defense to stop them from that 2-yard line like that. I think that was big for them early because you're absolutely right. They couldn't get in a hole. If Michigan jumped up 14-3, 17-3 early, they're just going to recluse and squeeze them down from that. TCU did a great job avoiding that from the start.
I think those yards on that sack, too, on how you lost and how they missed out on that scoring opportunity was, you know, critical there. If you run, even if you run jumbo package, get stuff with no gain there, you've pinned them deep. And that little bit of breathing room there was, I think, critical for a little bit of, you know, energy that TCU was able to jump out and start that game offensively with.
I agree with that 100%.
And there was a false start. It's been a long day. I'm sorry.
I think you're right. I think you're right. I think they were on like the 6 or 7 and it backed them up outside the 10 and they were able to get inside the 5.
What do you guys think about the touchdown ruled on the field, and then they go to replay and overturn it. The long touchdown pass, Michigan, again, ruled on the field as a touchdown. Then they rule he's down at the one. Of course, on the next play, they fumble the exchange. TCU recovers, and it's a turnover, and Michigan is yet again inside the five-yard line, coming away with 0 points with a turnover. Parker, did you think, again, with your fan hat on even, because, I mean, I personally think it should have stayed a touchdown. I understand his body fell in the field of play. I don't think he had the ball at that point. What do you think, Parker, with your TCU purple-tinted sunglasses on? Was it the right call to overturn it? Like, or did you think it actually was a touchdown?
I mean, obviously, if that was my team, I would want that to have stood a touchdown. But I honestly don't have a strong opinion about it. It's kind of like TCU had one against Kansas where that made the game a little closer than it should have been, where it was like, he was like half a cheek in, half a cheek out. What are we doing here? There's not a clear guidance on that. And I just don't think we have a good sense of a consistent rule application of what like in the motion of football is. Like, I that's something like in the NFL we would never have to deal with. We wouldn't have stopped play. Like, that would have just been a touchdown and it's fine. So it is a little silly like that. But I mean, yeah, it's not ideal in terms of like expected points loss. Really, though, it's not that much because first down and, you know, inches at your opponent's goal line is going to be, you know, five and a half, six expected points there. So, again, that's one of those things where it's like, yes, I think this was obviously that was important. You would have liked to have the touchdown, yada, yada. But like also if Michigan wanted to win that game, I think they needed to be able to just punch the ball in from the 1 yard line on fourth and, you know, or from fourth and goal. So, definitely a weird play. I don't think it was, you know, super egregious. I'm certain that I would be unhappy with it if it had gone the other direction, but I think it was a pretty unclear play all around.
No, 100%. I agree with you. Michigan's got to punch the ball and they have no one to blame but themselves for that. I just thought it was very interesting. And again, I'm an Ohio State fan, so we're going to get to my heartache here in a second, but I'm an Ohio State fan, and I thought, you know, they ruled a touchdown on the field. That was pretty harsh against Michigan to then, on replay, bring that back out. So, agree with you. They got to punch it in. The expected points, as you mentioned, I would think, Parker, if you're first and goal inside the one, it's got to be above six, I would think. But, I know we got to look at Brian Formoe's charts for those. But, King, what do you think in late in the game, Michigan's making the comeback, and then McCarthy throws the second pick. Like, at that point, King, for you, was it over, or did Michigan still have a chance? Because, I mean, two pick sixes, like, the fact that Michigan was still in the game late and the fact they had 0 points, or maybe it was 3 points from three possessions inside the five, like, it's almost a miracle Michigan was even still in the game when you look at some of the big plays and those big stops in the red zone, not finishing the drives for Michigan.
Yeah, and at that point, I really did get the feeling inside that it was going to be too much for Michigan to overcome there. I mean, you just look at how that game was going at that point. Michigan had the momentum. It was killed. And to me, I talked about it on our episode last week. JJ McCarthy, so good this year at taking care of the football. I think he only had three interceptions on the year coming into this semifinal game. But watching him consistently throughout the year, you still felt that there were some throws that he was making, there were some decisions that he were making, that it was almost setting up for a game where he was going to have a couple turnovers. I've been watching JJ McCarthy for years. He actually beat my former high school in the state championship game back in 2018 before he transferred down to IMG when he played at Joliet, not Joliet Catholic, one of the Catholic schools in Chicago. I'm blanking on Nazareth is what it was, Nazareth Academy, right? And so this is, you know, obviously five-star QB. But what I'd seen from him at the college level thus far, he's a good quarterback, but I wasn't 100% sold on his decision-making. And he clearly made a couple decisions that impacted the game. I think a lot of Michigan fans will say that those two pick sixes were the difference in the game. I don't necessarily know if I agree with that. I still think TCU did enough to win the football game. But at that point, you know,
I mean, TCU had two interceptions as well that were way flukier.
That's true, right? Yeah, that's true.
Than D. Winters baiting JJ McCarthy into a
that's
bad
that's
pass,
very true. Yeah. Especially specifically the one, I forget which wide receiver it went off of, but dug in through that absolute missile in the middle of the field that just went off his hands. Sanders still I think it was him who ended up getting that interception. But I agree with you.
I certainly didn't mean that TCU didn't do enough to win the game. I'm just, if you look at some of the different stats and outcomes of big moments in that game, it's a little interesting to me that Michigan was even that close in the end, just because TCU, time and time again, a staple of a good team, a staple of a team that has done this year, game in, game out this year, made the big play in the big moment when they needed to, and there's a reason they're playing for the national championship. Last thing on Michigan, really, before we turn our attention to the second semifinal game, a lot of rumors about Jim Harbaugh potentially going to the NFL. He came out today. Parker, I think I saw you quote tweet it, not a denial. He says, no one knows the future, but I expect, or I think I'll be at Michigan next year. I expect to be at Michigan next year. Just real quick, yes or no, we'll start, Josh, with you. Will Jim Harbaugh be the head coach at Michigan in 2023?
Yes, I think he will.
Kinger? Josh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, last year he flew to Minnesota and did not get – I think he wanted that job, and he didn't actually, as I understand it, was not offered it. So I'm not sure exactly how much they're actually – you know, they may be gauging his interest and it's coming out and leaking. I'd be shocked if and what he said after that Minnesota search, and, you know, and how much he was dedicated and all this stuff. I think it'd be pretty hard for him to go back on that. So I'm expecting him to be there at Michigan, especially with, you know, this late in the coaching cycle hire and stuff. They don't really have somebody in place. I think he's a Michigan man, and I think he wouldn't leave. I think that is a factor. But that's my two cents on it.
Nope, fair points. You're right. He was, halfway out the door last year. It was very, very public. He was interviewing with Minnesota. People thought he was going. He didn't get offered the job, my understanding as well. Josh King, what do you think? 2023, Jim Harbaugh, the coach at Michigan?
My gut tells me yes. If you look at the open NFL coaching jobs right now, I don't necessarily know that there's a particular situation out there that is really that appealing to anybody. I mean, you're talking about the Indianapolis Colts. You're pointing yourself over there, Kelly. As long as Chris Ballard's the GM there, I don't know that that's a situation that you want to ingrain yourself in. Denver's a mess as well. I mean, you look at Carolina, that's a possibility, but my gut still tells me that he's going to be back. Although I do think one thing about Jim Harbaugh is I actually do think something about this makes me feel like I actually think ultimately he will end up in the NFL. I think he wants a Super Bowl more than he wants a national championship at Michigan. So, you know, it's only a matter of time, in my opinion.
I would agree with the Super Bowl versus national championship piece. Parker, what about you? Jim Harbaugh, coach in Michigan in 2023?
I think probably. It's my understanding that during the COVID year, he took some concessions on pay and also was assured of some things that were going to happen, especially in reference to like NIL and facilities. And he is just making sure that he maximizes his leverage to get the program running the way he wants it to get run, which is probably not great for, you know, health and all that. But like, they're not going to fire him, right? Like, there's nothing he can do where they're like, no, we don't want, like, they obviously want him there. So I think it's a little bit more of a bargaining game, a little bit more of a, again, I would like to do this my way. So I think he stays there and they make the changes that he wants.
Those are all really good viewpoints and perspectives. You guys have sort of changed my mind a little bit. I'm going to go out on a limb, though. I'm going to say I don't think he's going to be there in 2023. I really think the NFL, the allure, trying to win a Super Bowl, Kinger, as you pointed out, I think that's too great. I think he's – I don't know. Jim is the longest he's been at one place, if I'm not mistaken. Jim Harbaugh seems to be a person that tends to, you know, from an outsider's perspective, maybe wears out his welcome after a certain amount of time at places. At least that used to be the perception of him. Maybe I'm just wishful thinking here because, as an Ohio State fan, I don't want Jim Harbaugh at Michigan. Jim Harbaugh, when Michigan hired Jim Harbaugh, he was the only coach that I said I don't want Michigan to hire because he scares me. I think he's going to do well, and it took him a few years to get over that hump, but my goodness, has he gotten over that hump now, putting it on Ohio State 2 years in a row, winning the Big Ten Championship 2 years in a row, going to the playoff 2 years in a row. I know he's fallen in the semifinal game, but to be in the playoff two consecutive years, especially when Michigan hasn't been in a playoff or played for a national championship game in the 20-plus years prior to his arrival, he scares me. I don't like him being there. I think Ohio State would be better suited if he's not there, so maybe it's wishful thinking. The Colts also need a head coach. I love Jeff Saturday as a player. He had zero experience as a head coach at any level other than high school. The experiment hasn't worked. We have the largest blown lead in NFL history. The team has somehow gotten worse from when he took over. Like, I'm sorry. I love you, Jeff Saturday. You're not our head coach, I don't think, moving forward. So I would love to see Jim Harbaugh come here because it kills two birds with one stone for me. Gets him out of Ann Arbor and upgrades the Colts at that position. So those are my thoughts. I'm the only one in that train. I hope I'm right and you guys are wrong just because I don't want to see him in Ann Arbor anymore. But Josh, let's start with you. We're transitioning now. I've made it very clear on this episode as well as in the past, I am an Ohio State fan. Unfortunately, we have to talk about the Peach Bowl. It was number one Georgia, number four Ohio State. your team was victorious, Josh. I'm going to need a minute to compose myself anyway. So take us away. How are you feeling as a fan in that game, watching that game? Ohio State jumps out to the big lead. Georgia comes back. Ohio State jumps out to another lead. I mean, it was a roller coaster for a neutral, I'm sure. For you and I, though, it cuts deep. You had the ecstasy at the end. I had the despair. Tell us, how are you feeling? What were the keys to victory? What turned the game? Just take it away. What was your perspective of this Peach Bowl game with Georgia and Ohio State?
I thoroughly enjoyed the game. I was there in the stadium. My good friend who has Falcons season tickets hooked me up, and I had a fantastic seat and really thoroughly enjoyed the game. There's no chance I would have enjoyed it if we had not gotten the national championship last year. It would have been absolute train wreck emotionally, I mean psychologically, but it is fun when things are rolling and you've got that sort of monkey off your back. It was a blast, and I just came out of that game with the utmost respect for number one CJ Stroud. The guy, I mean, he was obviously, you know, two-time Heisman finalist, he's a baller, but just the way he composed himself during the game, after the game, and I'm a great college quarterback, and I hope that I'll be a fan of his going forward. And I would have never said that about any other team that Georgia's ever played. So my perspective has changed. But he, you know, they did some things that Georgia was not necessarily prepared for. They seemed to be dropping back more in the pocket more to give him more time to offset the Georgia pass rush and pressure, and let him see the field a little more and off and move him out of the pocket. And man, golly, he just made some incredible plays. So many throws on the run for 30 and 20 plus yard touchdowns. It was, and then, you know, but Georgia and Todd Monken just got the offense back on track, and just every knockout that they tried to deliver, they got back up and scored, you know, to battle back to take the lead. And then, you know, just that middle eight, which I believe some guys talk about as an important stretch analytically and also football sense wise, you know, Georgia goes down, stumbles, gets a field goal, then promptly gives up a 4-play 75-yard drive. Ohio State takes back the lead. We come out in the third quarter, 3 or 4 and out. And then, and Ohio State extends the lead, but then, you know, Georgia kind of, the defense came together. They only surrendered 6 more points, and we were down 6 points with fourth quarter. And Stetson effing Bennett did it again. He's like something like 15 of 17.
Dude, he's a straight gamer. There's no other way to describe Stetson Bennett but a gamer.
I mean, he played great in the first quarter, great in the fourth quarter, and just, you know, like, oh, second and third were a little hairy there, giving up a interception there in a critical part of the field and in a critical time in the game. But it was exciting as hell, and it was a wild ride and tons of fun, and the stadium was electric, just jammed full. Wasn't quite 50-50, but it was really, really close, and just an exciting, awesome atmosphere. And it's easy for me to be so happy and excited because, yeah, we did, we pulled it out. It was a lot of fun. It was surprising to see. I knew that Ohio State was going to give up yards in between the, you know, that was going to get yards, and that Georgia was going to give up yards between the 40s. And I did expect that Georgia was going to clamp down in those scoring opportunities. They were the number one team inside the red zone all season long, but that did not stop Ohio State. Of course, they did. You know, Georgia, towards the end of the game, they did hold them to some critical field goals. And obviously, when it's a 42-41 score, you need every single play. So, but it was surprising, honestly surprising, to see as good as much trust and belief I have in as Todd Monken, and as much as I've seen from Stetson Bennett and the absolute stable of playmakers they have on offense, I have to say, surprised to see us outscore an offense with the pedigree and caliber of CJ Stroud and Ohio State. So it was fantastic.
I didn't know you were there, Josh. That's awesome. I was going to ask you what the split was of fans. You said it wasn't quite 50-50. So what do you think, like 60-40 Georgia, something like that?
60-40 somewhere. I mean, it was loud for every, you know, 60-40 is might as well be 50-50. It was just loud the whole time. It wasn't like, you know, either quarterback was going to be able to calm the crowd down on a critical offensive play. It was just, it was insane and just jam packed, standing room only, you know, Mercedes-Benz stadium record, attendance. It was awesome.
That's incredible. No, that's very cool. And from taking my Ohio State fandom out of it, it was an amazing college football game, and it had almost everything you want in it. Tons of offense, tons of points, tons of big plays, high quality competition. A lot of times in a college football season or in bowl season, you'll get a close game, you get a competitive game, but the quality of play is kind of eh. This game, the quality of play was off the charts, and it was a very competitive game. I mean, both these semifinals, two of the best semifinals that we've had, really, in the college football playoff era. I think another one, if, again, sore subject for me, maybe 2019 Ohio State-Clemson. Phenomenal game. Ohio State comes out on the wrong side of that one, too. Kinger, as a – you're not an Ohio State fan, but you are a fan of the Big Ten. Who were you rooting for in this game? I don't even know. Were you rooting for Ohio State or were you rooting for Georgia?
I was torn completely because I'm not an Ohio State fan. I actually really do enjoy watching Ohio State lose, if I'm being honest, Kelly. That's probably coming as no surprise to you. But having TCU already won, I did kind of want some representation from the Big Ten, if I'm being honest, in a national championship game. It's been some time since we've had that. But at the end of the day, there was no hard feelings that Ohio State lost the game. I think I'm actually a little bit more excited for TCU Georgia than I would be for TCU Ohio State. I don't really know why. I think I maybe have some more emotional sediment to maybe seeing the SEC switch to maybe being Georgia now being as the top dog over Alabama. I think that excites me a little bit more than potentially seeing Ohio State in the national championship there. So it was a great game, though. If Ohio State would have won, that would have been great for the Big Ten, but ultimately I didn't care.
Didn't know. I couldn't remember if you had said last week who you're rooting for in that one. So, Parker, we're going to get to the national championship game here in a second. That's why we're all here. That's what we're all excited about. Anything for you to add about the Peach Bowl, Ohio State or Georgia related, before we get into previewing the big game?
I think the big thing that stood out to me is that Ohio State in the second half had, what, first and goal, first and 10 from the 23, and then another first and goal, maybe a first and 10 at the inside the 20, and then they missed that field goal, kind of didn't really run an offense to create it. They had three chances there where any points would have put this out of reach and just couldn't. I mean, they just couldn't close the deal there. I know they were down wide receiver wise as well. I think it's a testament to Georgia that they played a bad game and they won. Playing bad games, winning bad games against really good teams is a hard thing to do. I also think that I felt like Ohio State was really inconsistent in their coaching decisions in the second half. I don't know why they wouldn't just line up and go for it. If it was a good idea to run a fake, it's a better idea to let your Heisman finalist quarterback try and get a yard there. And
I will say they were going to get that fake though, Parker. I will say it. And then Kirby got the timeout just in time.
There was 12 men on the field.
There were 12 guys on the field.
And I totally missed that.
So that timeout was actually a negative EV decision. Wow. Because they didn't have one later. But also you could argue maybe the referees wouldn't have gotten it, whatever.
Yeah,
but there's 12 men on the
field. I totally missed that. Yeah. And I'll tell you guys what, when Kirby called the timeout, I stormed out of the room because I was so upset. So I went upstairs and I actually missed like a minute, not quite a minute of action before I came back in. So if they said that on the broadcast, that would be why I missed it.
I don't think it was caught on the broadcast.
Okay, I was going to say, that'd be why I missed it there. And then guys, I got off social media. I got off all internet of everything. My phone was just off for 24 hours after that game, which ended up being about 36 hours because the game ended so late. I didn't turn it back on until Monday around noon or a little before noonish. I DM'd both of you guys basically as soon as I turned my phone on to try to get you on the podcast this week. So I missed that. This is news to me. I did not know there were 12 men on the field. So sorry to interrupt you there, Parker.
Text message inbox looking like, would you have a lot of people chirping here? Not too bad.
There were a lot, and a lot of people just didn't get responses. Like, I'm not gonna lie, I'm 30 years old, so I fully acknowledge I am too old to be this invested in a athletic endeavor in which nobody involved in the game knows me. They don't know me from anybody. I don't know any of them. But there are a few things in this world and outside of family that I care very, very, very deeply about. Ohio State football is one of those very few things. So when they lose heartbreaking games, and yes, I would call this a heartbreaking game. This is up there with me, 2019 Clemson, 2015 Michigan State to an extent, just because I really think that team had a chance, and that just was a horrific game in the rain there in November in the Horseshoe. There's a few games over the last 20 years that stick out to me. This game's up there in that conversation for most heartbreaking, because we're going to get to it in a second, what my numbers think about Georgia TCU, and TCU's bucked the trend all year. So I'm done saying, hey, TCU's a big dog, they're not going to win. I'm done saying that. But Ohio State would have been a big favorite in this game, so you have to think their chances of winning a national championship if they would have beaten Georgia are probably favorable, meaning better than 50-50. So that's hard to swallow. But yeah, for me, this game, Anyway, oh, I was on a rant. I was talking about texting people back. So people were trying to like give me stuff and everything. Like, listen, and people on Twitter were doing it too. Like, I don't owe anybody anything in any of that. I don't typically rub people's noses in it when Ohio State wins, because I don't like when people rub my nose in it when Ohio State loses. That doesn't stop people. I get it. And I'm not telling them they have to stop, but you're not going to get a response from me. So, yeah, it was brutal, King, to turn it back on and to see all that. There were a few from guys being like, hey, man, I'm sorry, that had to hurt, like, whatever. But and I texted those people back. But the ones that were just, like, laughing and saying, ha-ha, sucks to be Ohio State, like, okay, my team was in it. For me, I have to step back. That's a successful season. If you make the college football playoff at Ohio State, that's a successful season. A lot of Buckeye fans will say it's win the Big Ten, it's win the national championship or bust. That's not true. Winning the Big Ten is a goal, and beating Michigan is expected. That's a goal. You got to beat them. This is 2 years in a row Ohio State's falling short. Winning the Big Ten, that's great too. But if you don't win the Big Ten and still make the playoff, to me, that's still a successful season. Would have liked to see it go farther, but yeah, just tough to swallow for sure. I have ranted about my feelings enough. Parker, I cut you off. You were still going, and I want to get back to it.
I'm so ADHD. I don't remember what I was saying when I started, but I agree. You should ignore morons on Twitter.
Oh, man.
As a Georgia fan on Twitter, I resemble that remark.
And it's fine. People are going to be what they are, but don't tag me or DM me and say, hey, where's your response about this or what about that? And I'm like, dude, no, come on. What are we doing here? But no, anyway. So, all right. We've talked about the semifinal games. We are getting to the national championship game. We have number one Georgia, number three TCU. Georgia obviously undefeated. TCU with their only blemish being in the Big 12 championship game, a great game against Kansas State, a team that they had beaten earlier in the year. Josh, let's start with you since we started with Parker at the beginning. Let's start with you on this one. Georgia's a 13.5 point favorite now in Vegas. I'll get to what my numbers think about it in a second. Parker, I'd want to hear what your numbers think too. Josh, what does Georgia need to do to win this game? And also, what about TCU scares you the most? And then Parker, we'll ask you the same things from the TCU perspective. But Josh, let's start with you. You are the reigning national champions. You are the number one seed. You are the undefeated number one team consensus in the country. Got to start with you.
So I guess what concerns me is having seen Georgia. One thing I pointed out on Twitter and in the blog leading into the Peach Bowl was that Ohio State had surrendered, who had played pretty good defense and was, you know, top 10 in most, if you know, metrics defensively, that they had given up their two highest EPA and success rates passing against, defensive passing success rate allowed to opposing offenses. So I was like, oh, Georgia can do this. But now Georgia has done that. They have had their two worst passing games on them, LSU in the SEC Championship and the Peach Bowl. So that is a little bit of concern considering you've got Max Duggan and Quentin Johnston coming
Josh,
in.
Josh, I want to stop you on that thought right there that you said that Georgia's had their two worst passing defensive games this season. Is Kelee Ringo becoming a little bit of a vulnerability, a liability in that secondary?
No, he's not a liability because he's really good and he's our best player and Kirby has the trust in him. Now, you know, he was in the frame when guys were running free and missing and did not tackle him, but those were not targets according to PFF. He was like one of six or seven, and with 67 yards, he did give up a touchdown. The SEC Championship game was a different thing. He was absolutely targeted on there. One stat that you'll see on my little national championship preview was that Georgia has faced the highest percentage of pass plays in all of college football. I used to think that was a testament to the run defense, but I think it's also if you know that you're not going to run the ball, you can't run the ball on them, which few teams have had very much, if any, success on, that you're going to throw the ball. You're a cornerback on an island. Yeah, you're going to go with the single guy. And Ohio State has wide receivers. And LSU has good wide receivers. And, you know, it is when you're on an island like that, you can get beat sometimes. Do I think he is a little bit of a sophomore slump from his first full year starting in 20? Yes, I do. But I do have faith. And listen, Kirby Smart's a hell of a lot, hell of a lot smarter than me. And I know from the inside sources that Kirby has the utmost faith in him. So no, I don't think he's a liability. But can Quentin Johnston and Max Duggan beat him? Yes, they can.
I think liability was probably the wrong choice of word to use there. If you look at the PF coverage grid, I think it was like 58-59 in the national championship. He had a couple of rough games this season. The sophomore slump, the way you described it, I think that's pretty accurate. Maybe didn't quite have the season that he was hoping for.
Absolutely. No, I mean, he's definitely the sort of lightning rod for the defense, which is a really spectacular defense. And there's always I'm not going to say it's a weak link, but he is the focal point of it. They've got Christopher Smith, who didn't have a really good PFF grade game either, who's been our veteran safety there, who's an NFL caliber player. Those guys are good on Ohio State. They really, really are. And Max Duggan is good, and Quentin Johnston is good. So I don't think you can discount that. So I'm excited to see them. I do feel like they do get a little bit of that. They don't have as many guys that they can run out at Georgia. So I do feel like that they're going to have a little bit more of a ability to send more guys at Max Duggan, and that don't have to drop back and watch the underneath or the slant routes and stuff. So it'll be interesting. I think it'll be interesting to see this offensive game plan that Sonny's going to have and what Kirby dials up for the Horned Frogs on Monday night.
Parker, we'll ask you the same thing. What does TCU need to do to position themselves to have a chance, yet again as underdogs, as they've been many times this year, to win on the biggest stage? And what about Georgia scares you the most? I'm kind of laughing about that because as I look at my numbers, just about everything about Georgia scares me. But we can see them be vulnerable. Ohio State obviously had some success. The Missouri game earlier this year was not a great game for Georgia, but maybe Missouri showed a blueprint as to things you can do. So, Parker, what about TCU? What does TCU need to do? And what about Georgia scares you?
Yeah, so the two things for TCU, I think, are offensively, TCU is, 83rd in passing success rate, 37.4%, which is just too low. Their EPA per pass is really good, 30th. And what they've done a good job at is finding the open man on a big play and kind of bailing themselves out. You saw, 76-yard touchdown for Quentin Johnston that was, caught 2 yards behind the line on that crossing route. was still, I think, about a 10-yard pass for Max Duggan because he just ran straight backwards to try and mitigate some of that pressure. But Garrett Riley can obviously, scheme up a big play when they need it fairly reliably this season. But the passing success rate being so low is going to put them in a really bad spot against Michigan. I stopped tracking at some point because the emotions took over. But I think at one point in the third quarter, they were averaging like a 3.2 yards to go on third down. And that's huge for TCU because they are so good on early downs. They're 15th in early downs EPA per play, but they are 65th in third and fourth down success rate. A lot of that has to do with that passing success rate, right? If I'm not as successful on early downs, then I'm finding myself in these third and long situations. I'm not going to convert those, especially with offensive line being what it is. So I think TCU needs to figure out some of these concepts they've had to get some more passing success and kind of artificially raise their floor on offense by generating some more of those passing success rates, knowing that Georgia's going to devote a ton of attention to Quentin Johnston and say, I dare you to have somebody else beat us. I think that's what we're going to see pretty well. And that's a good bet, I think, in terms of expected value. So TCU has to be able to increase their passing success rate, find ways to kind of move the ball in littler chunks and not just rely on the 76-yard pass. And avoid those third down.
Do you think the TCU offensive line is going to hold up okay versus this Georgia front? I mean, if you look at, they've got an excellent defensive line. We know how good they are against the run, but pressure maybe. That's maybe some of the areas that Georgia maybe hasn't quite exceeded at in regards to getting quarterback pressure this year. How do you think TCU's offensive line holds up there?
I'm actually really interested to see what happens because TCU's tackles, and Josh, I'd be interested in your opinion on this, being a little familiar with Georgia's pressures and what they're doing. TCU's tackles are not very good, either one of them. And what TCU does a lot in most of their blocking schemes is send those tackles into zone, and then they send the center and the guard out and the running back to kind of get that. What that does that worries me is that creates a little bit of a vacuum where someone like Jalen Carter can just wreak havoc up the middle. And if those guys can't get out there, then you've got Jalen Carter coming right up the middle and you've got Georgia's edge rushers just almost unblocked. I think we're going to see a lot of TCU just trying to chip a guy and get a break and get Kendre Miller past them. But that's certainly what I'm worried about, not just from the standpoint of, like the tackles on the edges, but more so the movement in the interior line and how disruptive Carter can be and those other guys on the line really is going to limit a lot of what TCU can do. Like, I don't think we'll see TCU run a gap scheme run all game. I would stick to zone. Cause I think that's probably gives you a little bit better chance to rely on the athleticism of Kendre Miller and a little less of a chance to have to rely on, you know, moving these big Georgia defenders into the right spot so that Kendre Miller can get open.
Has it been announced, Parker, that Kendre is playing in this game? Have they come out and said that?
No, he's technically questionable.
But you feeling very confident that he's going to be playing?
No. I am breaking no news. Okay.
Your gut feel. Yeah, I know you're not breaking news.
Oh, gut feeling. I think he'll try to play. I have no idea why, like how healthy he is. I think he'll certainly take the first snap and try to play. Regardless if he's healthy or not, I don't think there's any way he's going to be on the sideline in sweats for this game. So
totally. I think his health is very important to TCU's chances in this game. I'm not going to go as far as to say they can't win without him just because I'm not saying that about TCU anymore. Like, King, how many times did I say on the podcast this week or this year, oh, yeah, my number is like Texas by this many. My number is like Baylor by this many. My number is like Kansas State by this many against TCU, and they turn around and they win all these games. Like, I'm not saying that, but I do think Parker, obviously, Kendre Miller. I think if you were going to put one person from the TCU, maybe this is a hot take, Parker, I'd love to get your opinion, and you're going to tell me to get out of here. If you had to take one person from the TCU roster and put them in New York for the Heisman Trophy ceremony this year, I don't know if I wouldn't have picked Kendre Miller to be that player. Like, I understand Max Duggan plays quarterback, I understand all that stuff, but I almost think Kendre Miller, like, he was that good for me this year. So I don't know if that's like an outrageous thing coming from an outsider to say to a TCU fan or not, but I do think that him playing in the game is going to be crucial for TCU's chances.
I think he is really good, like undeniably. It doesn't matter what I think. He is undeniably very good. He was lost in Zach Evans' shadow. It's a testament to the program keeping him around this year after so many guys transferred and him to take over that feature back role. I do think that seeing the drop off from him to DeMercado does emphasize how much, you know, scheme matters. I think that DeMercado is slower and not as agile, but I do think that he is done very well in the system as well. Miller, you know, 3.6 yards of contact after 3.35. I really am not inclined to believe that any Heisman in our modern game should involve a running back, but it's a different, you know, what the Heisman should be is a different conversation. In terms of agreeing with the more salient point, Kendre Miller as a running back is underrated, especially with Zach Evans' shadow kind of looming over him, has done a great job and will be on a roster in the NFL for sure. Which for a 3-star, that's great. Like, that's amazing. For a 3-star to be an NFL roster, like, that's super impressive. So
100%. He was one of the surprises of the year for me, for sure. Again, as somebody who's not tracking on TCU necessarily that closely, looking holistically at college football at the national landscape, you absolutely got lost in Evans's shadow last year. And with him out of the door, look at him shining for TCU this year. And speaking of NFL rosters, so Josh, I know coming into this year, I talked on your show early in the year about Georgia and how my numbers projected 11-1 in the regular season. And I had to, like, hey, Georgia fans, calm down. Like, I know I'm saying you're going to win one fewer regular season game. You're still 11-1. I still expect you to make the SEC championship game. I still expect you to have a very competitive game with Alabama in that game, all that stuff. Of course, we know how Alabama season went. Part of my concern in my numbers, if you can call it that, they started the season power rated number 3 for me. So if you can call it concern, was the amount of talent and production that was lost on the defensive side of the ball. Josh, how has the defense performed this year relative to the expectations that you had coming into the season, knowing how much talent was lost? I mean, record-breaking talent in the first round to the draft last year.
I think I put out one of my posts in the preseason that the 4.1 yards per play allowed defensively was unsustainable. I think you should set a reasonable goal of, you know, I think we're like 34% success rate allowed to. So it was like, I expected them to regress to, you know, 38, 39 and 4.5 plus yards per play, which is elite. And they did that. Now down the stretch, I think they actually crept up to closer to 5 yards per play allowed, which is, I mean, anything under five is great.
It's elite.
It's elite. And where they did not drop off, and I expected them to drop off, was those red zone and scoring opportunity plays inside the 40 and inside the 20. And they played really great and kept that scoring defense extremely, extremely good. And that's a testament to Jalen Carter up front. That's where it starts. And certainly, Keely Ringo, I mean, we talked about him earlier, but Kamari Lassiter, who's playing as, I believe it's a true freshman, but he played fantastic all year. Christopher Smith in the secondary was there. I mean, they had players that were, certainly not unheralded by any stretch. Everyone in the world knew who Jalen Carter was, but they had places where they on all at the corner, at the second in the secondary and in the D line to sort of be leaders there, and they have performed and not let this defense slide back that much at all. Mykel Williams, who is a guy that maybe some of your listeners may not know, he's actually got more pressures than Jalen Carter, and Zion Logue, and can get to these guys. And if to talk about the game on Monday, if those three guys can get pressure without extra help from Robert Beal coming off the edge, and you can bring him in to blitz and also allow another guy to watch Duggan, I expect that Georgia will have defensively a better game on Monday than they did on Saturday night. And I do believe that that is a critical place where TCU has to get pressure off of Duggan. And I think anyone can say the game is won in the trenches, but I do believe that that front three for Georgia getting after Duggan could be a problem. And I predict that those guys can get it done. So I think I've got a 99 pressures allowed by the starting offensive line for TCU. And that's sort of what you want to do. That's what Kirby wants to do is get after the guys with the front three and allow his backers and his secondary to cover and get after the ball and do havoc. I think it's well known that Georgia hadn't got as many sacks as you would expect in elite defense, but that's not always by design. But I do think that everyone is keyed on what Georgia's doing, and they're getting rid of the ball quickly. And that's what Duggan can do. So I do feel like this game will be on Duggan with his feet, getting out of the pocket, making plays, and especially if they're dinged up at running back. They just have to get drives going, even if it's a war of attrition, just getting down the field and getting in and not letting Georgia get the ball at the 35 and 40 yard line, getting them inside the 25 and like making them drive the field, I think is going to be critical. So watch that D line and watch for Mykel Williams. I think Jalen's going to be on the radar for everybody, but Mykel Williams had a great game on Saturday night. I expect another big one. He's growing up right in front of our eyes.
The spread on this game, Kinger, if I'm not mistaken, is 13.5. At least that's where it opened. We're recording on Tuesday night, so King, correct me if I'm wrong on that. Parker, where do your numbers have this game? But one, I love seeing, Parker, since you've been at Sumer, seeing the advanced stats for the NFL games now. That's been really cool to start seeing pop up on Twitter and all that, so I've enjoyed that. But obviously those became famous with your college football advanced stat previews on Tuesdays. What do your numbers make of this game in terms of projected spread and then percent chance to win for TCU? I'm assuming you have Georgia as the favorite, but are you in line with Vegas? You're a little bit shorter than Vegas.
I do have Georgia as a favorite. I think I probably have this game lower than anybody else who's projecting it in terms of total, which terrifies me. But again, I put in the numbers, put in the pace stuff and make it happen. And so I have this as about an 11-point win for Georgia, with Georgia staying in kind of the high mid 20s as a baseline scoring there. So that gives you Georgia about 78% to win, which feels good. I mean, that feels about right. In terms of what we're looking at matchups and what we've talked about here. And so, we talked about it on BetUS today, and none of us actually gave out a pick. We all kind of said, if TCU, it feels like if you're going to go low total and you're going to go high margin, but this didn't feel like it was a plus value bet either way here. I feel like this line is pretty dialed in for the national championship here.
Josh, I looked at you. So for those listening to the podcast, we do record with video and then we post the audio. King, I think in 2023, maybe we should consider posting the video. People have asked for that. it's maybe a nice ad, something on YouTube or something, who knows. That's down the road. But Josh, when Parker was talking about what he's projecting as for a total here with Georgia, again, being an 11-ish point favorite by his numbers, but only scoring in the upper 20s, your eyebrows raised. What's your thought there with Georgia scoring in the upper 20s? Would you take the over on Georgia's total being, call it 29?
I would take the over on that just because, like Parker talked about, sort of the offensive and sort of the passing success rate that the TCU offense, I think that Georgia's going to get a couple extra drives out of that. And Monken, I think, wants to score points, knowing what Duggan he's been doing the entire season long. So I just don't think you would ever take the – not that you would take the your pedal off the, your foot off the gas in a national championship game, but I do feel like that Georgia's defense can – get a couple extra drives out of that. And that's the only reason I feel like that I probably would go over that 30. I actually have like a 31, 33, 34. And again, I don't model. This is just sort of what I've tracked and what I know that the Georgia offense can do. That's where I feel like that can be. But I do think that that TCU is going to get somewhere in the 14 to 20 range on that. So I don't know how far off we are on that number. I am curious, and I put this in the chat, if I can take us off the rails a little bit. Parker, TCU trailed 6 of 9 games coming down the stretch. I had to come back in all of them except for the Big 12 championship. What was it like watching them with a lead and trying to hold on to that game? And honestly, another question is, and I looked at it, I expected when they were, and I broke it down some success rate and stuff by point differential, and I expected them to be a higher success rate when they were down, which wasn't the case. They were sort of on their season average. Does that jive with what you saw at a TCU? And tell us, what can you tell me specifically, since I have your ear right now, about what you expect out of a game plan if TCU is down a little bit or up a little bit?
Yeah, I think that you know, in the second half, you really did see the TCU, they played like they were down, which is what they do, is just saying like, hey, we're just going to be a little less conservative. We're going to try and drum it up. I think they would have actually liked to play a little bit differently, but with DeMarcado, you know, the run game is a little bit different, although he played amazingly, and I'm not taking anything away from that in relief there. I think that the biggest thing, this is going to sound so dumb, like so trivial, like obvious, but the biggest thing that matters about TCU's game state is like, if I have a lead, then I'm going to be able to get the ball to Quentin Johnston more because you're not going to 100% know what I'm doing. If I'm behind, I really need to go to him. And so I have to get more creative to kind of move the ball around. So it was actually interesting to see that as TCU had a lead, they had, you know, it was his second most productive game behind Kansas. You know, they really, in that game, I think that was as close to, you know, shit has hit the fan. Sorry, I didn't mean to say that. Stuff has hit the fan as it has for them all season. And they really went to Quentin Johnston a bunch. When TCU was up, when they needed a score, they found him and went to him. And you know, he had, I think, 9 targets, and the next closest guy had 3 or 4. They really, really, really concentrated on him. So TC with a lead, they were saying, all right, let's keep ahead with our guy, going to our guy. Let's trust our quarterback and our best player to make plays. Whereas from behind, it's been a little bit more Swiss Army knife of like, oh, they're covering Quentin Johnston. That's not working. That's why we're behind. Let's go find Tay Barber. Let's go find Jared Wiley. Let's kind of move things around. So it is like, you think, hey, we're down, we're pressing. But in reality, it's when they're up, it's kind of like they're cruising, things are going well, they can find their guy.
I was a little interested to see how how on par they were with their averages for the season when they were up or down. And I guess that's a testament of what you saw with your eyes. It was like, yeah, they got this. They know what they're doing. They don't have to do anything that differently. And they just gutted so many wins out. And, you know, I am a Purple Theory fan. I don't get to catch every episode, but I do remember mid-season catching you and Grant. And you guys were just picking your wins, coming up with Texas coming down the stretch. And it was kind of wild to hear you guys. I think you kind of sheepishly admitted it. It's like, hey, we could be 11-1 real easily. So it's been pretty wild to see how you got to that record. And I've become a TCU fan just because I'm a fan of your work. So it's been kind of fun to see you guys get here. But it's wild. It's like, I don't want to say you throw out the record books and throw out the stats, but you kind of have to do. And I don't think anybody is taking, at least in my Twitter world, and no one's taking TCU lightly at all, seeing what Max has done for the last couple of years. So I'm hoping for a great game. And like I said, it's fun to cheer for a great game when you got the monkey off your back. So I'm sure you're not cheering for a great game. You would love to see every mistake made by Georgia and TCU roll, but it's going to be pretty wild. And I think you guys have improved dramatically at coaching. Is that fair to say?
There's a couple things that, you know, we could go a long while on all of that, but I think TC's strength and conditioning has been really good. They've been healthy most of the season, even with their stupid, you know, 11 straight games to end the season there, and they went 10-1 against that stretch. I think that the defense is not necessarily better coaching, but, you know, like, there's the memes about, like, Gary Patterson being sweaty on the sidelines. Well, that's because, you know, he calls out all 11 responsibilities every play for the defense, and that's going to take a toll on you. And it's hot in Texas, but Gillespie's defense is a lot more like of an athletic fluidity. So, like, I think that the defense probably is not as good as it could have been the last couple of years, but it wasn't that good the last couple of years because there were issues with the play call, with the guys knowing what to do, and it broke down so easily. Here, there's more redundancies. You get a longer athletic leash, and so they're able to play to a higher ceiling. On offense, legitimately, it's almost the exact same, and it's just we're going to score instead of being scared to throw over the middle of the field. We're going to have an offensive line coach who is actually an offensive line coach and knows what he's doing, which is a big thing there. And I do legitimately think that, like, the vibes matter. Things are going really, really poorly, really, really quickly. And eternity begins anew each day. And so to have, you know, fans at spring practice and stuff, I think players play better when they're more excited about playing. So, yeah, it's been layers, but it's been fun. And I think the company line at the very beginning of the season was 8-4 would be an excellent level setting season. So we've just kind of been laughing and enjoying it as it's happened.
What did you project, Parker, for season win total for TCU? What was your expectations coming into this year?
I think that my modal outcome was about 8, like 7.8 or something.
About 8.
Yeah.
So for TCU to get there, and I saw some stuff, you know, circling on Twitter. Essentially, I think it was 100-1 odds, or was it more than that? Something. It was north of that for TCU to actually be a national champion. It'd be, I think, considered one of the biggest long shots of all time if TCU actually ended up winning the game on Monday.
Yeah, I want to say I saw 200. Yeah, Josh, someone Josh said at one point north. In the summer, at one book, that, it was one. At one point in the summer, one book had it at 1,000 odd is something I saw. 1,000-1 odds is something I saw on Twitter just the other day. So somewhere in that range, yeah, it would definitely be one of the biggest upsets from a preseason expectation.
Everyone here probably knows Bud Elliott. You know, this would be, you know, he says you got to have that 50% blue chip ratio, and this would bust that, and it's going to come. You know, there will be a Cinderella, and maybe with the expanded playoff that.
Well, this is the only the second time we've tested it, right? Cincinnati last year, and then TCU this year.
But I think Notre Dame, a couple of those Notre Dames in the CFP just under that. And Tennessee was a team. Tennessee was actually like 48% blue chip ratio this year. And they were, you know, threatening it, obviously, at one point late in the season as well. So
I think we watched the same Bud Elliott clip on Twitter today, Josh, because I saw. So he did say 2014 Oregon would have busted it had they beat Ohio State in that game. 2017 Clemson, I think it was, or 2015 Clemson, if they would have been able to get it done against Alabama, maybe it was, would have busted it. But now TCU obviously has a chance, being in the national championship game, to bust it. King, what do you think about this game? I know you've got just a few things you want to get to, and I'll get to some as well. Hard to top what Josh and Parker have provided, but I'm sure you've got a couple
of
nuggets. Add
to the database here of knowledge that I can now spew to people on Twitter and my friend group. But, you know, hearing the breakdowns, I agree with a lot of what they're saying. And these keys, what they're focusing on, I think for both teams, this is probably what they're going to need to do to win. And I just want to start by saying, Josh, the fact that your Georgia crew, the people that you're associating with the SEC, you're telling me that your crew is not taking TCU lightly, that's absolutely something I love to hear. And I'm going to take my weekly shot at the Alabama fans and the SEC. I was getting text messages all last weekend that TCU didn't belong. Michigan was going to win by 30 points, blah, blah, blah. And here we go. They come out. TCU finds a way to win the football game, and there's a lot of silence on their end. So from a Georgia fan perspective, I absolutely think that this is not a TCU team you can take lightly. And if you look at this spread off the bat, 13 points, it opened at 13.5 and went down to 13. I saw it 12.5 earlier, so it's sitting right around that 12.5, 13 trend. If I was going to guess, I'm going to say that most of the public is probably on TCU at this point. If you look at historical national championship trends, I just want to you see a lot of the public hyping on those underdogs. And 13 points, I'm going to bet TCU this weekend. I think that this is ultimately going to be a 7-10 point game. I can see this getting very ugly in a certain scenario, but I'm not going to doubt TCU in this offense. I think Max Duggan, he's a gamer as well. Stetson's a gamer, but so is Max Duggan. If TCU can find a way to get a little bit of this run game going with DeMercado, give Max Duggan some time, hit some of these quick throws like Parker's talking about, I think they're going to find a way to score. I was actually leaning towards the over originally, but after hearing both of your guys' analysis on this, I'm just going to probably stay off of that over. It sounds like the under is maybe the safer play there. That's going to be a no play from me, but on the defensive side of the ball for TCU, it's all about stopping that run. They got that 3-3-5. They're not the most, physical, big defense. You know, the 3-3-5 scheme normally a little bit smaller up front against the run. You rely more on that secondary, the linebacker play for your speed and efficiency there. I'm looking forward to watching that matchup this week. And if TCU can find a way to limit that run game, which Georgia's been very successful in getting just chunk run plays in regards to success rate, I think, as you guys would say, that they've been very good this year. If TCU can limit that, it's going to be a close ball game. So I'm rooting for TCU in this one. I think it's going to be a good one. I think it's going to be more than 7-10. Josh, if Georgia wins the national championship, there's no hard feelings there. There would be no negative thoughts or in my head or negativity towards that. But I'm rooting for the underdog here. I think it's been pretty special what they've done this season, and I think it's going to be a great football game and one that we can be excited about to bring some parity to college football. Yes, Georgia's there, but TCU's story's special. It's different than what we've seen previously with the Clemson, Ohio State's, Bama year in and year out. And it's going to be a really exciting football game. I'm really looking forward to this matchup.
Yeah, King, it's going to be a great college football game. My numbers, it's interesting to hear you talk about the Vegas line and where it's settled. My numbers like Georgia by 12.5. It's an 81% win probability for me. I know Parker said it is, I think, 77. So we're right there in that same ballpark, both with the spread and the projected win probability for Georgia in this game. Guys, King, our listeners are probably tired of me saying it. TCU has been such a phenomenal story this year. Parker, you said your expectation of the preseason, 8 wins would have been a good season. You were more optimistic than I was about them. Coming into the year, my numbers had 6.4 regular season wins for TCU. So they finished with 5.6 more wins than I expected at the end of the regular season than I expected coming into the season, which ranked number one nationally this year in FBS, a full one game more than Duke, who finished second on that list with 4.6 more wins than expected. Georgia, Josh, you'll be happy to know, 0.9 more wins than expected, came in number 41 nationally. That's 12-0, and you were number 41 nationally. That's how high the bar was for me for Georgia coming into this year. TCU is and was the story of the season. It kind of started as Kansas early on. Syracuse was in there for a little bit having great years, and they still had great years respectively, those two teams, for those programs. TCU finished the deal, though. TCU finished strong. They finished 12-0. They drop it in the Big 12 championship to Kansas State. Then they bounce back, beat Michigan. Now they're here in the national championship game. Story of the season. They started the year power rated 44 for me. They are all the way up to number 9 now in my power ratings. Georgia started the season number 3, never dropped any lower than that. They are currently number 1. They have been for a good long while. This game, guys, I'm not going to say TCU doesn't have a chance because they're a team of destiny, maybe. They continue to prove us wrong. I do like Georgia on both sides of the ball here. My numbers favor Georgia just slightly. The better matchup, in my opinion, is when TCU has the ball and Georgia's on defense. Like, that's an ultra-quality matchup. I hope Kendra Miller's playing because obviously that plays into it as well. I know Parker talking about some of the schemes, especially in the run game. How's TCU going to approach that great Georgia defensive line? How are they going to be able to hold up that TCU offensive line? So I'll definitely be keeping an eye on that now. But even on the other side of the ball, you've got a really good Georgia offense going against a much improved TCU defense compared to last year. Again, and under Gary Patterson, that was really a staple, but it really fell off last year. So it's been a great story. Sonny Dykes, Coach of the Year, absolutely deserves it. Very much looking forward to this game. King, for the purposes of the pool. I assume you're going Georgia, the Bowl Mania competition. Correct. I assume you're going Georgia. I am now taking TCU in that pool, because if I don't, I'm guaranteed to lose to you. So I'm taking the pick that I have to get it done. Going against the numbers, something I've challenged myself to do. Josh, we're going to ask you, we're not doing spreads. Who's going to win the game outright, Georgia or TCU? And then Parker, we'll come to you to wrap it up. But Josh, tell us who you got to win this game. And then please remind our listeners, where can they find you on Twitter? Where can they find the Dog Central content? Just plug everything you want to plug, because you've been amazing tonight. We've really enjoyed having you on.
This is my pleasure and flattered and honored to be here. I expect Georgia to win, and I expect it to come in similar fashion how Georgia has won: suffocating defense and a competent and efficient offense. My name is Josh. I am at DogStats on Twitter. I'm part of the Dog Central crew. That's DAWGS, plural, Dog Central. .com. We have a forum and bulletin board with inside information, and we have free blogs from, and that's where I drop a lot of my stats and sort of analysis. And actually, most of you guys have been linked into that their blog. So check us out. It's a lot of fun. We're trying to build a smarter, friendly or community of dog fans, and sort of kind of break the mold of the bulletin board that have grown a little tiresome that have been around for a long time. So if you want something new and you're fresh and you're a UGA fan or just want to jump in as a and learn some stuff, check us out on dogcentral.com. I would appreciate the click, and I think you might enjoy it.
Awesome. Thank you, Josh. You've been great. We really appreciate it. Parker, same question. Who's winning this game outright? If you're at liberty to say, I know you got the Bet US show and everything, but if you're at liberty to say, who's winning this game outright? And then please remind everybody, where can they find you? Plug everything you want to plug, because you've been amazing. Our first ever two-time guest on the podcast. Hopefully it's not the last, but take it away.
Well, if you guys have somebody else on a second time, then you'll have to have me on a third time so I can maintain my maintain my lead. I think Georgia's going to win this game. Looking at this kind of before, like, obviously we'll root against that. Hope I'm wrong. I've been wrong before. I'll be wrong again, I'm certain. I think that Georgia, you know, TCU has just had a great run. And every step of the way, they've really been able to just kind of outmaneuver their opponents. And I think that they are a really, really good team. And sometimes really good teams get beat by really excellent teams. And Georgia is a really excellent team. So we'll be rooting for it to be, you know, it to be close, it to be different than what I have. I'm excited to watch and excited to root. I personally, just full disclosure, I'm not betting a cent on this game. Have wrapped up my plays and everything this season, and just going to watch as a fan and enjoy it. So, you can find me at Twitter. Stats of War is the best place to do that. We'll do a couple more Bet US shows here, I think, the end of the season as well. Monday, I think we're doing a props show, and that should be fun. Don't tune in for me. Tune in for Kyle Hunter, who's like a betting genius, and just does some really great stuff. He and Gary Seegers are really, really sharp guys on that show with me. I'm really flattered to get to do stuff with them. You can just search BetUS College Football on YouTube, and it'll come up and get to our channel. Like, subscribe, that helps me out. The Purple Theory podcast, we signed it. We're part of Frogs Today now. And so we'll keep doing podcasts all through the off season, just cranking out content as we, you know, go back and rewatch every game from this season 5 times and relive it all.
Last question for me. Josh and I were talking offline, Parker. He said Monday night he's going to be watching the game from the comfort of his own home, 100-inch 4K projector. Are you going to be out and about, or are you going to be local at home, kicking it back, having a couple beers, watching the game?
On Saturday, I watched the first half of the Michigan-TCU game in public, and it became immediately apparent that I did not need to be in public while this was happening. And so we went home, and right. So I've watched every game from home. I've got a little treadmill walking pad, and I have a little football. You could see there's my football, that I anxiously squeeze and toss around while I walk on the treadmill. So I'll probably do that at home just to exercise some energy on a weeknight while that happens.
Cool. Embrace the moment from the comfort. You got to enjoy it. Both you guys, everybody's hoping for this one day. This is what we all strive for, Kelly. Hopefully one day the Purdue Boilermakers. I'm not counting on it, but you never know.
King, you're absolutely right. Josh, Parker, best of luck to your teams. Congratulations on great seasons regardless. We are very much looking forward to this game. It is the pinnacle of the college football season, of course. So we have one game left before we officially turn the page to the 2023 preseason projections, which I'm already itching for now that Ohio State's out, but I'm going to enjoy this one too. Thank you both again. We really appreciate it. This was an awesome episode. And for everyone who's still listening, we appreciate you. Thank you so much. We hope you enjoyed the show this college football season. We'll continue to do some stuff throughout the off season there, but this officially wraps up our 2022 season content. So until next time, enjoy the 2022 college football national championship game between TCU and Georgia.